It is the Locked On Bengals podcast with your hosts Joe Goodberry and Jake Lisco. Find us on Twitter at Joe Goodberry and at Jake_NFL. Please like, subscribe, and share as we try to grow this community and pump out daily Bengals content just for you.
Hey there, Bengals fans, and welcome to another episode of the Locked On Bengals podcast. This week, we are officially less than 270 hours away from the draft, I think I saw on Twitter today. Tiger Woods won his first major since 2008 and his first master since 2005, and you know what else happened to a Tiger-related thing in 2005? Carson Palmer's knee got blown up on an otherwise Super Bowl-ready Bengals team.
Where were you when that happened?
I was at my grandparents' house. We were watching the game there, and as soon as that happened, I don't think I watched the rest of the game like in and out of rooms, but I knew there was no way. Like even when they were winning, you knew there's no.
It was like almost like a dream state, right? How you kind of were just like living through it, like a car crash. Like you were in shock. You were just kind of whole time. Even if they pull it off, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. You know that they probably will be shorthanded, even though I think everyone at the time still liked John Kitna. I was in Atlanta at my dad's house.
Didn't hit me nearly as hard as 2015. 2015 absolutely ripped my heart out.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they had the game won.
I feel similar.
I was devastated. There was a party happening in my house. And I was watching the game. Nobody else, because I'm in Canada, right? And nobody out here really cares about football. So I'm watching the game by myself in my room, like about to be stoked, going to go get wasted at this party, have a great time. And then heartbreak.
Yeah,
Anyway, let's...
I was just going to add one thing that popped in my mind while thinking of 2005.
Yeah.
Was Vince Young, Matt Leinart, Rose Bowl, like the day or a couple of days before or after. And that was a great game. And I think that was the same year. I'm just going off memory because I think that was the same trip down to Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that Vince Young, Rose Bowl was something.
Yeah.
He looked incredible. I thought he was going to be amazing.
He won Rookie of the Year.
And then he got ruined.
By the Marvin Lewis version of the Titans.
We can just call him Jeff Fisher.
We can.
Right. So Game of Thrones is also back tonight. We're recording on Sunday, of course, and I'm very excited. And Joe has never watched Game of Thrones. Did you see at least the logo that the Bengals put out today, the cool Game of Thrones stylized tiger?
I did not. That sounds great. I guess I'll take your word for it. You know me. You can see my office and game room behind me, Jake. Everyone else can't. I nerd out on a lot of things. I think I would really like Game of Thrones. I just, you know how it is. I'm watching The Office for the first time right now. So,
sometimes I spend so much time. Sometimes you get stuck about a decade behind everybody else.
Sometimes that happens. I think I just get so focused or narrowed into whatever I'm doing that outside things just pass me by.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that probably happens to anybody. But you said you had questions, right? Like, this is a cultural moment today for a couple of reasons, right? Like, Tiger winning his first major since 2008, that's huge culturally for the United States. The amount of people involved in that don't usually give any cares about golf is high. I haven't watched a whole Masters tournament in probably a decade, and I watched every hole Tiger played.
We'll have it on a lot of times at work and on one of the TVs when I'm on weekends. And, if a crazy shot happens, I'll notice it. And be like, that's cool. I haven't golfed in about 2 years now. I'll do it once in a while. But, yeah, Tiger's cool and the story is cool. And, you know, especially because everyone thought he was done. And you hear the narrative after of, is this the greatest, like, career comeback you've ever seen? And man, it has to be, right? I just thinking about it. All the old guys at work were like, no, it's not. Come on. They're naming all these people I can't tell you anything about in all sports. And I'm like, nah, for maybe it's just our generation then. Maybe it's us. Maybe it's seeing him be the best of all time to getting, you know, not making cuts to coming back and winning it at his age. I mean, it was special.
I mean, he was crippled. He couldn't get out of bed. He had his spine fused. He won his last major, obviously, on a torn ACL, which is mind-blowing in the first place. And then to come back 11 years later, somebody on Twitter today made the analogy that was like, this is like Brett Favre coming out of retirement to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Anyway. Is this like John Elway going originally to the Super Bowl and then not again till his final 2 years? Is that like a comparable? But now, without getting crushed and beaten and out of the sport for like a year or two, right?
Without having his career in doubt, right? Like without, because Tiger, when he came back from the spinal fusion, he said his first drive he hit was 90 yards. He was afraid to swing a golf club.
I wonder, this would have to take some thought of what a comparable would be. Like if somebody like really having.
This would be like if Ryan Shazier comes back in 5 years.
And wins Defensive Player of the Year or just on the team for the Super Bowl. Either way, that'd be amazing, right?
And he's playing at a high level, yeah.
Tiger wasn't that bad. I think just coming back and making it on a team for Shazier would be similar, I guess.
So, big day for Tiger Woods fans, big day for Game of Thrones fans, except not a big day for you, Joe, except for this podcast, of course.
And I have some questions before we move on, about Game of Thrones. Maybe you can answer them. Surface level stuff. I see dragons. I see some frost giant looking guys that I assume are bad guys. I see a lot of people claiming different houses or whatever that means. I think it looks like last names or families. What is the goal? What is going on? Just surface level. Don't give me details because I plan on watching it. Everyone tells me I'll like it. What is it? What is it about?
All right. The high level, Joe, is there's a bunch of families that, after the king dies, think that they are the rightful heir to the throne of the seven kingdoms of Westeros.
And what makes them the rightful heir, though?
That's part of the show. I'm not going to get into the detail, right? So there are all these people that think that they're the rightful king or queen. And then there's this other existential threat of ice zombies from the north that is part of, the old history that's apparently happened before, but everyone's kind of forgotten about or doesn't believe. It's kind of like an old fairy tale. So that's kind of where we're at now, which is all those humans fighting for the crown coming to a head at the same time that this existential threat from the north, winter, quote unquote, has descended upon the rest of Westeros.
Okay, so
without getting into it in detail, that's the overarching story.
They're basically just fighting for it, and now we get to... Is this the last episode or last season?
Last season.
Okay, so this is the start of the last season.
But the last season, they're like cinematic-length episodes. The first couple episodes are like 52, 58 minutes, but after that, they're an hour, 20 minutes each for the last five episodes.
Yeah, I heard that, and the budget was crazy, I think.
It's nuts.
Well, that's cool. That is interesting. Cool. I plan on watching it.
There are reasons to criticize Game of Thrones that exist, and it depends on, like, if you're a book reader, you're going to have different criticisms than somebody who, isn't a book reader, whatever. But most people enjoy it. My parents are watching it, Like, my parents like it. Has a universal appeal, I think, is what I'm trying to say there.
Who reads books, right?
I like books.
Oh. Then go books.
Moving on, we had a couple of landslides over the weekend in our Mock Madness bracket. Devin White and Dwayne Haskins just absolutely wiping out Andre Dillard and Drew Lock, respectively. Many of you weren't even sure that Andre Dillard is the best offensive tackle in the class, which is fair. Some of you specifically say that Juwan Taylor is probably going to be the best tackle in 3 years. Others say Jonah Williams. Others even said Dalton Risner. I think that they might be pointing to you, Joe, and Dalton Risner. The QB Reisner's divide... Good. The QB divide much clearer. 1,079 votes. That's our most popular poll so far. And like 88 or something percent of you wanted Dwayne Haskins more than you want Drew Lock. You want the Very system clear. Guy. Yeah. You guys want Andy Dalton potentially 2.0 instead of Jay Cutler.
And I still don't know what I would pick out of those. I just... In terms of type wise, I think obviously they're different prospects than those comparisons, even though the comparisons I think are legit. I was surprised at how big of a landslide that actually turned out to be, because I think stylistically people want the opposite end of spectrum when it comes to Andy Dalton right now, right? They just I thought people would like, give me something completely different, and I think that would be Drew Lock. So
it might have been more interesting if we had put Haskins against Murray. I mean, Murray's going to be gone, so we didn't do it that way. But I wonder how that would have been. Maybe we could do that one for fun. I don't think I would have accepted
the results. I think there have been too many Ohio State fans that may have, and because we haven't talked recently, definitely not in the last month, about Murray seriously. So it's hard. I think people have started to create connections with some of these guys, right? That happens, and because we haven't talked about Murray, I think that that poll could go towards Haskins.
It could. I mean, in the episode in which we talk about it, I'm gonna say how much better I think Murray is, but that is neither here nor there. And today, your Ohio State biases, if you have them, do not matter unless you just choose to abstain from voting, I guess. Today, it's a matchup of a couple of athletes, and I mean athletes, from Michigan. In defensive lineman, I don't know where exactly you slot him. Most likely he'll be drafted to play on the edge, Rashawn Gary, and off-ball linebacker Devin Bush.
Yeah, two good Michigan prospects. I would say Gary definitely probably leads, or Gary could get drafted earlier than Devin Bush, because I think premium position as a pass rusher, right? And number two, extremely high recruit. I want to say he was even the number one defensive recruit coming out of high school. And he never really produced. 34 games played, 23 tackles for a loss, 9.5 sacks in his career. 5.5 was the most he ever had in a full season. So the production numbers for him are barely over middle range to average, if depending on where you look. 21 years old, 6'4", 277, tested like a freak that everyone knew he was coming out. Relative athletic score at a 9.94.
So extremely elite athlete. He could immediately contribute probably everywhere on the defensive line in different positions. He wouldn't play nose tackle, but from three tech to edge, he would be able to play. He'd be able to back all those up probably right away if the Bengals draft him in year one. He, like you said, had an outstanding athletic profile at the combine, especially when it comes to burst and speed. Ridiculous straight line speed for a guy of his weight, and ridiculous burst also for a guy of his weight. Above average in agility and strength testing, good size for defensive end. If you were to switch that over to defensive tackle, the numbers change a little bit. His strength doesn't line up as well, but his agility, his burst, his speed look a little bit better. So if you think he's a better three tech than defensive end, then you're contending with a lighter weight, similar to Ed Oliver. And this is probably even more of a projection because, like you said, Joe, he doesn't hit the productivity thresholds from gym metrics for solo tackling, sacks, or tackles for a loss. And those are the most predictive metrics for defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
PFF has him graded much better as a run defender than a pass rusher. And along with that, in line with that, his pass rushing productivity ranks 36th. In the class, and his run stop percentage was 7th in the class. So run stop percentage, pretty good. Run defense grade, pretty good. Pass rush grade, pretty bad. Pass rush productivity, also pretty bad. Especially, I think, when you compare him to his teammate, Chase Winovich, who came in at 25th in pass rushing, 2nd in run stopping, with better grades in both categories across the board for the last 2 years.
People have asked us, is there a similar player to Gary that tested like a freak, especially on the defensive line, but didn't really have the college production? And someone said to me, I believe last weekend after we answered this on the mailbag, they said, what about Danielle Hunter, who went in the 3rd round, I want to say?
I said Danielle Hunter during the podcast.
Oh, was it you? Maybe I'm just crossing my streams here. Anyways, Danielle Hunter, and the thing about, I checked on Danielle Hunter is where I wanted to go with this. And his tackle share and tackle for loss share was much higher. And so it's probably not a good comparable to him, although that would be the hope. I would say, I kind of think of him how I thought of Jadeveon Clowney. Now, Clowney's production was even higher also, but I think of it because Clowney never had high sack numbers, and even in the NFL now, he's more of a versatile defensive athlete that you can move around and create havoc with at a bunch of different positions, and I think that's what you would hope for Rashawn Gary. He may never be a 10-sack guy. He may always be like a 6-to-8-sack guy, the way Justin Smith was, and be a really good run defender that can move all across your defensive line. So he will have the position value. I wouldn't be surprised if he still went between 6 and 12 or 6 and 15, I think is probably a more fair range. The Giants right there at 6, I think makes some sense if they're ready to pull the trigger that early.
And the Bengals have had a visit with Rashawn Gary as well. He's obviously, as we've discussed, there's a bit of boom or bust to him, but he has premium upside at a premium position. And even if he is, you know, I think his probably best case is Jadeveon Clowney as a pro because he's been very, very good. But if he has Jadeveon Clowney upside or Justin Smith upside, those are both premier defenders in the NFL.
And that's what you're hoping for, right?
That's what you're hoping for, especially if you're drafting him in the top 10. Our opposition to Rashawn Gary is his teammate, Devin Bush, who, if the Bengals were to draft Devin Bush, he likely steps in and is a day one starter. And if he's not, well, then you have some problems because that means Jordan Evans or Hardy Nickerson or I don't even know, somebody else came in and beat him.
If you draft a linebacker at number 11, off the ball linebacker at 11, he better be starting or we riot.
Likely an immediate starter at a position the Bengals need, so those are things in Devin Bush's favor for sure. He did take a step back, according to PFF, as a run defender in 2018, but he did get much better in coverage as well and is consistently graded as a good blitzer. And I think when you watch Devin Bush, you'll see good coverage for him sideline to sideline without much depth in his coverage responsibilities. You don't see him very often. And I asked on Twitter, if you guys have games where Devin Bush had to carry the seam and you can actually see what happens, I would love to see him. I think I saw it happen. I've seen it happen like 3 times in the games I've watched. You see him running sideline to sideline, chasing running backs into the flats, beating blockers to the point of attack on screen plays often, and that's very valuable. But you don't see him getting depth and covering hook curls, slants, seam routes from tight ends in the middle of the defense. And that's my big question on Devin Bush's coverage abilities, but graded well in coverage, at least in 2018 for Pro Football Focus. And like Rashawn Gary, like Devin White is one of Devin Bush's top comparables for off-ball linebackers in terms of athletic profile, especially because they're 5'11", 6 foot. They're both short. Devin White, I think we've talked about on the podcast, is a little bit denser. He's got a little bit more weight to him for his height, but he's considered undersized for sure, compared to historic off-ball linebackers coming in at third percentile for height. And that is, I think, a risk
factor. Devin Bush,
Devin Bush, yeah.
Yes.
When we start to talk about being able to see the running back. And we talked about this. I don't remember what linebacker it was we were talking about this with. Maybe it was Devin White, where I thought he lost eye discipline and sometimes would lose track of the ball carrier. And you don't see that as much with Devin Bush. Maybe he wasn't subject to as much deception from his opponents, but that could be an issue for him as motion and deception and counter movement becomes more popular in the NFL as it's adopted from the college game.
You know, when you see it with Bush is when a lineman gets in front of him or on top of him. And I think he struggles with it a little more than Devin White because Bush is more of a physical, wants to make contact, shed the guy instead of avoiding the guy. And because he's 5'11", you got a 6'4", 6'5" lineman coming up on you. It really messes with his vision then. Whereas White is more of a guessing in his reads. And just wanting to attack and chase. Bush is more physical, calculated, but because of his short height, and not in comparison with White, because White's short also, I think in comparison with the average linebacker, 5'11 gets him in trouble a little bit. But we've talked a lot about Bush before. I mean, people should be familiar with Bush and his positives. We're not trying to knock him down and make Gary sound good. I think this is going to – this poll is going to go the way we expect it, but we're just trying to at least make it a fair fight here.
Just acknowledging that Rashawn Gary is seen by many as a top 10 type prospect, and Devin Bush until the combine was, you know, well, he'd be there in the second round. And then he ran a 4.43 and he jumped 40 inches and that went out the window.
Oh, his complete athletic profile was great.
Yeah, everything. So that's our matchup today. We're down to one a day. Now that we have a little bit more breathing room between now and the draft, we have, I think, 9 episodes after this. The 9th of those will be draft day. So that's kind of exciting, right?
Avengers Endgame Day, you mean?
I'm seeing it Friday.
Okay.
Well, I hope I'm seeing it Friday. That's what my friends and I are talking about. Anyway, that's the only matchup today. Tomorrow we'll finish it out. We'll finish out the first round with Clelin Ferrell and Montez Sweat, a couple of edge guys, edge pass rushers. And then we'll get on to the second round, and some of the matchups maybe we'll get a little bit closer, maybe not. Maybe you guys are just very sure about your hierarchy of things, and we won't have a close vote. That being said, it is Mock Draft Monday. We're going to take a quick break, and today it'll be a dueling draft. Joe and I will make maybe different picks, and we're going to go through four rounds on Fanspeak, where there is an updated composite board. So stick around. We'll be right back with that.
Welcome back to the Locked On Bengals podcast. It is Mock Draft Monday. Really, we only have one more after this Mock Draft Monday. We are that close to the real thing. I'm excited. I know you are. This time, we got a good suggestion on Twitter. Someone said we should do dueling mocks, all right? So when we get to our pick, basically, when the Bengals are on the clock at 11, Jake's going to make his pick. I'm going to make my pick. We're going to try to not, you know, converse with each other and discuss it, even though we can discuss our picks before we used a collaborative effort as if we were in the war room. Now this is going to be who has the best draft out of Jake and I.
And here we go. We're going to let it roll. Am I picking first? Is that going to be the way it works?
Well, we can go back and forth. So you can pick first in the first round. I'll pick first in the second, and then you get third. I got fourth.
Oh, man, it's so hard already. So we're on the clock here in round one now as the Bengals, and my choices come down to Ed Oliver, TJ Hockenson, Dwayne Haskins, and it's really only hard, Devin Bush, and it's really only hard because I really want Ed Oliver, and I also want Dwayne Haskins, and then right. The positions of need, Devin Bush, TJ Hockenson. So do I want to take the quarterback? See, here's my thing. I don't believe in Dwayne Haskins. I don't think he's a future. And okay. So because I don't think Dwayne Haskins is a future, and I think Ed Oliver has Geno Atkins level upside and will be able to step in right away, will be a three down kind of player.
Yep.
I'm Ed Oliver here.
And that's fine, because I am also Ed Oliver. We're not going to get a dueling first round here because this is the scenario, right? People have been asking recently, how about this guy or this guy? This guy versus that guy. When I talk on Twitter, people always pit two or three guys together and tell me to pick one. In many of those cases, almost all of them, it's never a blue chip player. If you look at this board, ranked number four is Ed Oliver. He's still available at 11. We've seen some mocks where he's been available at 11. If he is on draft day and the Bengals do not draft Ed Oliver, this is going to be a very fired up podcast that night. And
even if they pick Dwayne Haskins instead?
Listen, I will come back to, well, here's what it would come down to. If Haskins is really good and saves them money and gets them to another step, yeah, then you made the right pick because the quarterback over everything. Quarterback over everything. If you believe he's a franchise quarterback, do it. Don't look back and let's roll. But me,
I guess neither of us do.
Exactly. I wouldn't take Haskins. Now, I would take Haskins if there wasn't a blue chip player left.
Yeah.
Because I would think the risk is worth the reward at a position that really the way they've filled the roster. Most of these guys you draft, other than Devin Bush, isn't walking into a starting job in 2019. So your roster doesn't get much better with any of these picks, other than depth and someone else getting hurt and a few plays here or there. So for me, that would be the biggest upside. And I think there is some safeness with Dwayne Haskins because I think he is a good system-type quarterback and should be that in the NFL at the very least. So if Oliver wasn't here, I could lean towards Haskins. But he's here, and he's a blue-chip player in my opinion. I think, honestly, I would take him top five in this draft if the Bengals own one of those picks. So being there at 11, this is a no-brainer to me. We're not going to debate this too long in terms of why, you know, going in different directions in round one. It's going to get interesting from here on out because we're not filling a top need, I think, in for this team, even though Oliver will play a lot for us.
Yeah. So just to recap, as we are taking Oliver, both of us are taking Oliver. To recap how we got to this point, and just so you know who's who's the top players available, who's picked is Kyler Murray, Quinnen Williams, Nick Bosa, Brian Burns, a surprise at number four to Oakland, Josh Allen to Tampa at five, Jonah Williams to New York Giants at six, DK Metcalf to the Jaguars at seven, Devin White to Detroit at eight, Greedy Williams to Buffalo at nine, and Drew Lock to Denver at 10. And Denver likes Drew Lock, so
I don't think this is crazy.
Not the craziest thing.
Different spots, but overall not crazy.
So we're going to let the first round roll, and we'll get back with the second round. And Joe's going to be picking first between the two of us in the second
round. Dwayne Haskins to the Miami Dolphins.
There he goes.
Paris Campbell, number 17 to the New York Giants. That's a replacement for Odell Beckham.
Who was Paris Campbell threw the first pitch at a Reds game last week, and Tom Brenneman said, for sure, first round pick, Paris Campbell. So Tom Brenneman knows. Other notable picks directly after Ed Oliver, TJ Hockenson, Dwayne Haskins, two other guys we were considering. Anybody else here off the board? Devin Bush goes to Pittsburgh, of course, at 20.
That's how it works. And look at Cody Ford, number 31 to the Rams. And I said this last week on the podcast. I do think Cody Ford can end up being in the back half of the first round.
Yep.
And if the Bengals like him, I wonder where they value him, if he's worth going to get.
I wonder, too. Here we go in the second round. Let's let it roll.
And I get the first pick this time, so no copying me the way I copied you.
Well, we'll see how it goes. Jeffrey Simmons gone with the first pick in the second round. Rocky Asin, the third pick. A.J. Brown, the fourth pick. And a lot of people this weekend I've seen are saying A.J. Brown is their favorite receiver in the draft. Draymond Jones goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Dexter Lawrence to the Denver Broncos. Joe, you're up. Do you see your guy?
One comment quick on A.J. Brown. I think he's the man, too. I mean, physical, and then run after the catch. I think he runs good routes. He comes back for the ball, fights for the ball. I think he's quicker than you expect. He's going to be a good red zone guy. I put him in the slot and let him dominate. I think A.J. Brown's going to be a really good receiver. So now we're on the clock, right? And we've already addressed defensive tackle. So I want to look at linebackers. I want to look at offensive tackles if possible. Top guy available is Mack Wilson out of Alabama, and this is becoming increasingly popular. If you look at this, is a consensus board we're using, or a composite board, uses everyone's board. Mack Wilson is ranked 57th on this board. We're picking 42, so we should almost at this point expect Mack Wilson to be there, and I wouldn't be surprised if a few guys that we've talked about go higher, Blake Cashman being one of them. Mm-hmm. So for me, I look at that. Can you click on tackle for me, and let me see real quick? Yeah. Caleb McGarry is rising, man. There was a time where I was like, no, he's definitely a guard and he's a mid-round pick. And then I think the athleticism profile matched with him being 6'7". People are going to look at his arm length and say, yeah, that's probably his only negative, and he's a really good player. And I think McGarry is somebody that is going to go in this range. And honestly, I would consider him here. I don't know who I'm picking. Do you have a thought process on this?
My thought process here is – I want to go best player available, and I'm looking at these wide receivers that I think have fallen a little bit. I'm also looking at a quarterback in Daniel Jones in the second round that I think would be a reasonable option. But it's your pick. You got to go first.
Yeah, I am, and I keep doing this. I think we did this in Mock Draft Monday, and I'm going to go with it for now because I think he won't be there in the third round. He's my favorite of the second-tier linebackers, and I'm going to go with Blake Cashman out of Minnesota.
You're Blake Cashman. I was considering Blake Cashman there. I think that is a reasonable place for him to go. I, however, am not going to draft for need. I'm going to assume that I can find fallers later. So I'm going to go with a guy that's been one of my favorites at the wide receiver position for most of this process, and that's J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. After running that 4.49 at the Stanford Pro Day, has absolutely outstanding ball skills. Great hands, huge catch radius. That's my guy, and I'll fill the needs in the third and the fourth, I guess, because I'm certainly not getting to them here in the second.
You got to draft for the future as much as you have to draft for the present.
Yeah, that's what they say. I was also considering Greg Little there. He goes a few picks later to the Atlanta Falcons. I was considering Deebo Samuel. He goes the very next pick, I think, to the Detroit Lions.
Caleb McGarry also went.
Yeah, there goes Caleb McGarry. Daniel Jones to the New England Patriots, of course, of course.
Mack Wilson, 31st pick in the second round, guys. Terry McLaurin, Patriots.
Yeah, right before pick. Terry McLaurin. Daniel Jones to Terry McLaurin. That's the future. I'm going to go to the third round where I have to pick first.
That's right, you do. And I'm already hoping. I already got a guy eyed up, okay? And I'm hoping he's there in the third round. So as soon as you hit that start button, I'm going to be watching this like a hawk.
Let's see if I have my guy. I have a couple guys. Okay, here we go. Yanni Kajust, first off the board in the third round. I think third round value for Yanni Kajust is actually pretty good.
Sure. I don't hate him.
All right, so here we go. I am on the clock as the Bengals. I'm looking at linebacker and tackle primarily. Jermaine Pratt is there. Bobby Okereke is there from Stanford, a guy that's grown on me since Vance Meek introduced him to me this week. Ben Burkervin is there. We've talked about him a lot on this podcast. At tackle, I'm looking straight at Titus Howard and Max Sharping. Those are the primary considerations for me at this point. Not really at any of these edge guys.
You know who really fits their linebacker profile almost exactly? And I posted Josh Oliver at tight end the other day. People really liked that. So as I'm building this, it's not done yet. Sione Takitaki.
Yeah.
Sixth round guy,
you think?
He's almost exactly right in there. Yeah, maybe. I think he's definitely day three. I just don't know. I mean, he tested well, so that can push those guys up sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. So I am worried now at this point about tackle, I think, more than linebacker. I could get Chuma Adoga coming back in the fourth round, but that's a bit of a risk. There can be a run on tackles in the third round here. There could also be a run on linebackers, but I feel better about the Drew Tranquil, Ben Burkervin, Bobby Okereke group being there.
The day three guys, yeah.
And at the top of round four than I do about getting my tackle in round four, so I'm taking Max Sharping.
I think that's a fine pick for you to take, Max Sharping. I am going back to the defensive line, and I'm going to fill it out and round it out. The more Bengals bring in edge guys, the more interested I've been in the position. Really pounded it out the last, you know, last week. I've watched him. He's listed as a defensive lineman for you, Jake, as you're flipping through. And it's Iowa's Anthony Nelson.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about Anthony Nelson.
Yeah,
6'7",
he looks good.
271. I'm going to call him the day two Rashawn Gary, and don't be surprised if he has a better career than Rashawn Gary. Relative athletic score, 9.23. So he's a very, very athletic guy at 6'7", 271. His cone and shuttle, a 6.95 for the cone, a 4.23 for the shuttle, are in the 90th percentile.
Is that pro day or combine?
Combine.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah, it's even better. And let me tell you about him, okay? So 37 games played. And remember, I talked about Gary, 34 games played, 23 tackles for a loss for Gary, 31 tackles for a loss for Nelson. Gary had 9.5 sacks in his career. Nelson had 9.5 last year. He's at 23 over his career. Very similar player. Can kick inside, but can rush from the edge also. He disrupts a lot of plays in the run game, too.
I like that pick.
Anthony Nelson, I'm going to take him, and he may split time with Dunlap or Lawson, whoever you need. He may replace Jordan Willis as that rundown end. He's kind of really going to be what Kerry Wynn is now, but in the future and much more, I mean, of everything. He's to me, I think I would definitely take this pick.
Yeah. He had the same competition as Rashawn Gary, too, when you talk about Rashawn Gary. So on we go into the fourth round, and Joe, you're going to be on the clock after we let the first few picks run. Hope your guy doesn't go.
And your guy just went, I think. Was Will Greer your guy? Because he just went right there to the Raiders, which I think is pretty interesting.
I need a linebacker here.
I watched PFF's YouTube video. I think you reposted it with Bruce Gradkowski, right? And they're analyzing Will Greer, and they compared him to
the bucket throws.
Yeah, but they compared him to Derek Carr, which I think Carr is not a good deep thrower or an aggressive deep thrower. But it's interesting that he goes to the Raiders now to pack up Carr.
The most interesting thing about that video to me was Bruce Gradkowski saying those bucket throws aren't there in the NFL. The windows are too tight. So the throws that he's good at deep, that he made a lot, he's saying aren't available in the pro game.
You know why? Because there's more stick throws. You don't get those easy. Being with the hash marks so wide in college, you get what you end up with is the offense like will be all the way to the right side of the field, and you end up with a safety that's has so much ground to cover that those, you know, single high safeties can't get over to these deep throws on the far side of the field. So that I think that's what he meant. You just don't get them. And he also mentioned how those are 30 to 35 yards in college, and they're 40 to 45 yards in the NFL for those deep balls. So Will Greer, who has arm strength questions, may lead you to believe those won't be there. Instead, in the NFL, what you need to do, getting off on a little bit of a tangent here, you need to hit those stick throws over the middle between windows, and that's what Will Greer doesn't do, and that was the point of that video. It was a good video. Look it up on YouTube. So now we're on the clock here. Bengals pick eighth in the fourth round again. I know where I want to go. I haven't gotten my offensive tackle yet. I would also consider Josh Oliver of San Jose State here. I think Oliver is exactly what the Bengals typically draft at tight end, and I really like him. But I think there's a few guys that if I don't take them, I can be more than happy with the next tier. I'm going to go back to tackle because I haven't taken one yet. I've gone defensive front seven, three picks in a row, really trying to build that defensive lineup and that defensive toughness up, because I like the secondary for the Bengals. I think adding three picks to that front seven changes this team not only this year but in the future. I think I got three guys that are going to play in 2019. I'm going back to the offensive line. I'm getting a guy that can back up and be a swing tackle, but has developmental upside, and that's Chuma Edoga out of USC. Long arms, athletic. He can back up left tackle, right tackle. He needs work, and he needs to add some strength. And honestly, I've compared this before, and people probably hate it that he sounds like a Cedric Ogbuehi. But when you're getting him in the fourth round versus the first round, it becomes that dice you want to take another roll on it. And for me, that's Chuma Edoga. He has the upside. That's what I want with this tackle pick, is somebody that maybe he develops in 2 years and he's your starting left tackle. Maybe he's forced into play because Bobby Hart's stinking it up and he's got to play right tackle. Either way, I wanted to get a guy before round four was over.
And I feel better about my guy in the third round being pressed into duty, especially early, than I do about Chuma Edoga. I do like Chuma Edoga, especially in the fourth. I would take Chuma Edoga in the third, and I think that might be where he's going
on
draft day. We'll see what happens, I think. But I, of course, at this point, need a linebacker. I'm considering Tavon Coney. I'm considering Bobby Okereke from Stanford, who we haven't talked about very much on this podcast. I'm considering Drew Tranquil. But my guy's there. Ben Burke-Hervin is there, and he's always there. And I don't know why he's always there. And maybe I'm just overrating him, right? Maybe, you know, for whatever reason, even though we're not seeing Devin White and Devin Bush's size liabilities, maybe since Ben Burke-Hervin isn't quite that level of athlete, NFL teams are like, you know what? You're too small. But for me, Ben Burke-Hervin was outstanding at Washington, especially as a cover player. He fits the weak side linebacker bill for me. And I feel like I've got a guy who's not that much worse off than Blake Cashman two rounds later.
Yeah, and I think that's fair to say that I think they're very similar players, to be honest with you. I just end up liking Cashman a little bit more because he hasn't played as much. And I think his progression is evident when you watch, and I think there's much more to come from him, and that's why I decided to take him two rounds earlier than you did. I would say you definitely won on the value there. On the Edoga versus Max Sharping, because that's who you took, I think we probably see this flipped on draft day. I wouldn't be surprised if Edoga went in the third round and Sharping was still there in the fourth, although I don't expect it. I do think that's the range we should expect the Bengals to take an offensive tackle.
Yeah, I think that'll depend on how NFL teams see Sharping coming from Northern Illinois in the MAC, the smaller school necessarily, but the lower level of competition versus Chuma Edoga. Although Chuma Edoga is in the Pac-12, so it's not like we've talked about the quality of pass rusher in the Pac-12 being pretty weak, with only really one or two guys really being draftable at the edge rusher position in all of the Pac-12. So you end up with Ed Oliver, Blake Cashman,
Anthony Nelson, and then
Chuma Edoga. So you still hit the needs, right? Neither of us hit a tight end in the first four rounds. So we're both looking at tight end here in the fifth round, probably maybe the sixth, but probably the fifth to fill that last kind of need we've talked about. But we both got Ed Oliver in the first. I think both of us hit a home run there. You got Cashman in the second. I went wide receiver. And this is the biggest difference in our draft, I think, is I've got the wide receiver and you've got Anthony Nelson. So you can compare J.J. Arcega-Whiteside to Anthony Nelson one round later. And I still feel like I got a good enough linebacker who's going to be able to contribute at the very least special teams day one. I think Ben Burke-Hervin can probably start pretty early as well because he's got a ton of experience, and especially has a ton of experience playing cover in a spread wide open conference in the Pac-12.
Yep, so you're not just going to vote on Rashawn Gary versus Devin Bush in our mock madness bracket. You're also going to vote to see who had a better draft out of Jake and Joe. And let me just say, Jake took a receiver in the second round. I'll find you a good receiver on day three. That's a guarantee.
But I got a guy who I think is easy wide receiver two material.
I think he could be. I agree. I think J.J. Arcega-Whiteside's a really good prospect.
And that's why I almost didn't take a wide receiver in the second round, but I had to stick with the best player available option there. And maybe Blake Cashman might be your best player available in the second round. But
no, he wasn't, but he's in the range, you know? So like,
it's reasonable.
Yeah, I think he's going to go between 40 and 55.
So when you compare Joe's draft to my draft, you're comparing taking Anthony Nelson in the third round, who I think is a very good player, and I like that pick, to getting the package of Burke-Hervin later, Sharping, I guess, in the third round instead. And we have Ed Oliver early, so why do we need a second defensive lineman already in the third round?
Well, I'm just adding more to it. You can never have too many defensive linemen. Let's turn a strength into a strength of the league, and let's let it dominate up front.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. I also just JJ Arcega-Whiteside has insane hands, insane catch radius, can run
He would be
routes.
fun. He'd be fun. I would
Yeah.
take George. If they take JJ Arcega-Whiteside at 42 on Friday night coming up,
We're
I'm not going
happy.
to complain. I like offensive weapons, number one. Number
Yeah.
two, I'm going to say, well, I don't know what's going on with John Ross, AJ Green, or Tyler Boyd, but I like having this fourth receiver. I don't want to see Cody Kore, Alex Erickson, and Auden Tate out there trying to run routes.
Yeah. There you go. So we'll have those options available for you to vote on, see who did better in this version of Mock Draft Monday, the opposing dueling drafts through four rounds. That's what you got. Coming up this
I
week,
won.
I disagree. I don't even respectfully disagree. I just disagree, my friend.
Okay to be wrong. We're still friends.
Go catch up on Game of Thrones, will you?
Yeah, all right now, right before.
Yeah, you got time, right? It's actually on, I think. Actually, as we're finishing recording this, Game of Thrones is starting. I gotta go.
Where?
9 o'clock Eastern, I think, is the airtime.
Okay.
It's 6 o'clock my time. That must mean it's 9 o'clock your time.
You're right.
There you have it, Bengals fans. This week coming up, more draft coverage. If the Bengals do anything newsworthy, we'll talk about that too. And as always, we'll take your questions going into the weekend. This has been the Locked On Bengals podcast. Thanks for sticking with us. We'll see you next time. Have a good one, Bengals fans.